Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So loud.
Oh,
that was
whenever you do that accent, it really throws
it
me.
Really throws you for a loop.
It's my mom's birthday and I'm trying to figure out what to get her. And so my goal is to bring my mom to the spa. So I'm getting my mom a spa day.
Great.
Isn't that a great gift?
I mean, I love a spa day.
I'm obsessed with a spa day.
I don't ever do one. I think I've done one in the last 15 years, but it was great.
Well, we're going to go again. So I booked at this place in Chicago called Air Chicago, and it's like the Air one here. Like there's a Roman bath one here.
They always name them Air or Salt or like.
It's weird. So I'm.
Wave.
I booked it and I texted my family and I was like, hey, I booked for me and mom. If anyone wants to join, come. You know what I mean? Send out the invite. And my sister was like, do not go there. And I like looked at everything and it looked so cool because it was like, it's like underground, dark lighting, blue pools. Like looked like they have a saltwater float bath. And I was like, this looks incredible. And my sister was like, everyone was like dry humping around me.
Oh my God, horrible.
And I'm horrible. So glad she told me because I was like, this is not where I want to go with my mom. So I booked a place closer to us, but I got to cancel. But I like was
you
about
to
spend
so
a ton
careful.
Of money. Because you spend...
So much money on a spa day. But here's the thing. Some of them, it's like Spa Castle. You can't go to Spa Castle here. It's
really?
All kids. It's almost like you might as well go to a fucking water park for how
Wait,
many
really?
Kids it is. And you're like, I came here because it's a spa. And you're in any of the fucking bodies of water. And there's just children water fighting next to you. And you're like, this is...
Miserable.
Crazy.
Miserable. That's horrible.
Yeah. This is a Six Flags. Like
I do. You know, I was bummed though because at the Air Spa, they had a 15-minute exfoliation. And you know, I love a little exfoliation.
I can't believe you love that.
I don't really love it, but I love the effort. Like, you're so smooth. You're like a little baby.
I don't care about that.
Well, I cut it. And so I'm going to have to say cancel that guy.
A very nice woman that lives next door who works at a place that does facials and things like that needed a...
Esthetician?
Sure. I don't... That's not her job.
Oh.
But she does work at a place that does them. And she was like, we need models for like social media. Would you want to come in and get a 1 hour free facial?
Yeah.
And I was like, sure. But yeah, I was like, sure. Like if it's not a massage and that's like really the only thing I care for. So then I go in and I'm like, yeah... It's not for me. Like, I gotta tell you, like, somebody rubbing stuff onto my face doesn't feel great. It doesn't feel... And when I leave, I'm like, feels like a lot of products have been applied to my body is, like, mostly how I feel.
Well, it's always hard. I was looking at the menu at this place. I'm taking her to Kohler Spa.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Not a great name.
What?
Not a great name.
Not a great name, but apparently
it's
very
somebody's
nice.
Somebody's last name.
Listen, there's a whirlpool, there's steam, there's sauna. Let's go.
Name it one of those words.
And what about air breath?
Air breath is perfect. It's a very spa name. Nose breather.
Nose
spa.
Mouth tape. It's so stressful picking out a massage. Do you feel that? Like, the menu of massage...
Oh, I know the one I get. It's always a deep tissue.
Okay. Well, this one I'm like definitely getting 80 minutes. I said 50, absolutely not. We go 80. And then I go, you know what? Like, come on. Like, it, like the lavender honey, the like choose your own adventure. I did a choose your own adventure
what for does 80 that minutes. Mean?
Whatever you want, you get.
Well, it's so my can't mom go wrong can
go
that.
In and be like, here, because like, here's the thing. I'm so yeah. curious. Like, I don't, are I, they that different?
No,
is the question.
Not, like, they're not. It's so bizarre. It's such a weird gimmick where they're like, we're going to light this flavor of candle or use this kind of oil. When really, it's just like, you're either going to be great at giving a massage or kind of okay at it. And I just want the person that's going to do the work. I want the person that's going to put in the work. And that's usually a deep tissue situation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I always feel like sometimes I got a massage when I was in Edinburgh, and as like my one day off, we got one day off the whole month we're there doing a show. And I was like, I'm going to a fucking spa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it. I was like, get yeah. me off my feet and someone rub my legs. And I chose a relaxing massage and I was like, fuck that.
It's not worth it. It's just someone like petting you
nice.
For an
it was,
hour.
It was really nice and relaxing. But like, you know, I also like if I'm getting these like once every six months, like, you better put in the fucking work, but
you gotta
also
work it
it's
out.
So uncomfortable at times. Like I was sore after a massage.
Oh no, I know what you mean. I don't mind that as much though, because I feel like it's like all in service of
the greater good.
The greater good. I'm into the pain game with things like massage. I'm like, I hope it kind of hurts. I hope there's a minute where I want to tell them to stop.
I have to tell you, I have a book recommendation for us for because I don't, that's a new segment, a book recommendation. I'm reading
intro?
This like, whoa, yeah, that's it. A book recommendation.
That's good because we have no one to thank, believe it or not, this episode.
Join Patreon. There's like over 50 episodes in there. Join it. What have you got to lose?
What have you got to lose?
$5 a month.
$5 a month.
Come on. Get that's a grip. Coffee.
That's a 5-piece nugs.
No, is it a idiot. Dollar a nug for McDonald's?
You're right. How much is it? $3 maybe?
You know what? Don't wade into
don't,
the waters.
Don't compare to the nugs.
Quinn, no, not even that. Don't wade into the fast food waters. What was the last fast food thing you've ever eaten? Yeah, she can't remember. Let's see this. When was the last thing of fast food you've eaten?
I did have Wendy's nuggets.
When?
In... July.
What? It's like you're giving me like Lucille Bluth. Like how much is fast food these days? $5 for a Coke? You have absolutely no clue. So I'm going, don't wade into these
right,
waters
right,
of fast
right,
food.
You know what I'm talking about. You called me out.
Thank you. And you know what? I will. That's what friends are for. I'm reading this book called The House on the Cerulean Sea by TJ Clune. And it is, I don't know what age it is. I feel like it's a little YA, but I just have to tell you a couple of the premise because it is a little true, dark, and creepy. There is basically like it's a world in which there are magic kids that are living in orphanages. And through, you know, a character has to go and like investigate this orphanage. And here are some of the kids that are in there. One is named Lucifer. And his name is Lucy, but he is the son of Satan. So it's this like little 6-year-old who's like, I will break your bones. And then he's like, just kidding. Like it's like a little precocious 6-year-old who just says like, I love dead bodies.
Yeah.
Do you want to join? Like really funny stuff. There's a gnome, a lady gnome who's 250 years old. But that's a teenager in gnome years. And then my favorite is there is like an amorphous blob that his whole life he was told that he's like a monster under the bed. And then this guy is like, you can be anything you want. So this blob who just is like a blob named Clancy with like eyes on his, he just wants to be a bellhop. So he like constantly like is freaking out about bellhops, like reads it like, just like that's what his goal in life is, to help people and be a bellhop.
I really like that.
And it's really funny. He's really sweet. There's other characters. I have like 100 pages left. And then there's a queer love story in it, which is so fun. So if you want to read it, I feel like it's like a good book for kids. Like,
is it YA?
I think it might be YA. I don't know what year, how old it is. But it's not, there's nothing graphic or nothing like, it does deal with like, but it's the idea of like, you're more than what you're born to be. Like, it's like all these like special kids. Magical Kids.
Cute.
It's really, really cute. And I think from what I understand, it was like a little bit like the antidote to some Harry Potter stuff, because it is like there's a queer love story in it, and it's very inclusive.
That's great.
But it's very sweet. Well, really cute.
Go buy it. Let's help her make some money.
You are listening to Truly
Darkly
Creepily.
I'm Quinlan Posner.
And that's Quinlan Posner.
It's still me over here. I haven't changed.
Quinlan Posner. I'm Carrie Bama.
Oh, right.
I'm
Carrie. Carrie's here too.
I'm Carrie Bama.
I forgot. I forgot you were here.
Oh, wait. I have to tell you, we got an amazing email from one of our listeners today.
Oh, read it.
The title of the email. It's such a good email. It made my heart really happy and my tits.
Great.
The title of the email was, where did it go? Oh, Heather wrote in bra recommendation for Carrie. And she's binging our podcast, and she was like, listen, she gave me a recommendation of a bra, but we're not, you know, I guess we're not.
Write to them. See if we get sponsors.
Oh my God, I should totally. Well, I won't reveal it now, but she's like, girl, this bra sucks you in and keeps everything in place. Try it out.
Love.
If you really want to run. Try it out if you really want to run. I don't think anyone ever chooses to do that. I don't run because of my knees, but I do bar class and wear them for that. Best of luck. I really love that.
I really love that too.
I feel like on October 18th, I was talking about my tits. That's why she was like, I got a bra for you.
I do want to recommend, because you got me thinking about recommendations, and I don't, you know, we don't always run out on here and recommend things, but
that we're not paid for.
Well, there's a really good Patreon episode. If you're a Patreon, this month's episode is about a very scary movie that I highly recommend, but you're going to have to join Patreon if you want to know about that.
It's such a good episode. I was on the edge of my freaking seat.
But I wanted to tell everyone, if you're not listening to Heavyweight, it is my favorite podcast, and I just need to tell you that it's so great. The host is so great. The stories are incredible. And I'm just thinking about it because they just came back this past month, and I've been just,
what is it?
Filled with joy. They have a good tagline to explain it, because I was trying to pitch another friend. It's a Gimlet podcast, and it's Jonathan Goldstein is the host, and he tries to help people resolve a moment from their past that they wish they could change.
Oh,
but it's,
I really like that.
Very funny, very all the feels, very everything. So if you just need another one to add to the old roster, I highly recommend it. And now a word from me.
Got him.
I'm going to tell you the story of the Shekels Mansion, and I'm calling it that because I don't know what to call this story.
Why do we need to introduce a story?
I'm just telling a story that has no name.
This is a story with no name.
It won't go on much more than 10 minutes. Maybe 15. Let's see how fast I talk. 15.
Wait, you a story in 10 minutes?
20? How long do I usually take?
Forever.
Oh, okay.
You're, I mean, they're great stories.
Thank you.
That is not a criticism. That's me going, God, I got to step up.
All right.
Last week's, my story was way too long, but I had to get it all in there.
You had to. You had no choice.
I had no choice in the matter. I know, because I chose it.
Well, I can tell you one thing. There's no way to get all this in here, because this story leaves me. What happened? Let me tell you the origin. I was reading a collection of Anne Rule stories, and this story was in it. And hell, I didn't use the stuff Anne Rule said because I read it a long time ago, and it was a library book. So I couldn't reference it when I went to go do the research. But it got me cooking on it, where I was like, this is a really wild story.
Gwen, you love to cook on a story. You love to cooking. Cook on a stove.
I was thinking. And then I thought, I got to go back and look at what I can just find online about it, because I can't find the damn book. So... ABC, Wikipedia, Oxygen, Arizona Central, KPBS, Dateline, and Times of San Diego were where I got some articles on this. And if anybody has any ideas, I'm going to want to talk about it. So let's say that one of our main characters is Rebecca Zahu. I don't know if I'm saying her last name right. She's Burmese American. And when she moved to the state, she moved to Arizona, she got married, she got divorced, she got married again. What's important is that in 2008, she began dating Jonah Shacknai. He is the CEO of a major pharmaceutical company. He is like a million bo billionaire. Mm-hmm. I think he, let me see. I wrote down one of the stats.
He's the president of the insurance, healthcare insurance company, you said?
And he's the, of a pharmaceutical company.
Okay.
So he earned like $6 million in a year in like 2010. Like just, he's very rich. And he's had a couple previous marriages himself. He was married to a woman named Kimberly, had a divorce, had a custody battle with her over their couple kids. Then he had a son named Max with his second wife, Dina. So he has kids, and Rebecca wants to be part of those kids' lives. And I would imagine, I think, I can't totally remember, but I think the older kids are maybe, at least one of them's like a teenage girl, and that can be challenging. Mm-hmm. But then she's got Max, who's, you know, very young at the time. He's six at the time of our story. So I think when they get together, I do the math on this, three. So I think that he might be more open to a relationship, but I don't really know the nature of their relationship. And I would imagine he's with his mom half the time as well. Although I'm kind of guessing here because I didn't write down any of the custody arrangements. Mm-hmm. What I can tell you is that in the summer of 2011, Max is at home with Rebecca and Jonah. Now, they have a house, a summer mansion in California, in Coronado. And for some reason, they call it the Spreckles Mansion sometimes because it was built for John D. Spreckles. I don't know. It's the guy's summer estate. Everyone needs one. So
we're working up to it. We're working
sure.
up to it.
So
I'm working up to just a house, frankly.
Fair. Very fair. But you call your house an estate because it makes it sound.
It does. Yeah. Loose.
Now, on July 11th, 911 gets a call. Max has been found on the floor beneath this stairwell landing along with the chandelier, and he's like non-responsive. What happened remains to be seen. What we know is that Rebecca and her 13-year-old sister, Zena, are in the house. They're both in different bathrooms. It's a huge fucking house. They said it's a 27-room house. They're each in different bathrooms. So Max is alone. Rebecca hears some sort of crazy loud noise, which was presumably him falling, doesn't know what's going on, walks outside the bathroom and sees the dog barking, Max at the bottom of these stairs, horribly injured. His scooter's there. There's some soccer balls. The fucking chandelier's there. It's just like not clear at all why this kid is at the bottom of the stairs. And it looks like maybe he fell off the second floor landing. Although how?
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows? I mean, he's six. Did he make a mistake? Did he make a bad decision? Did he try to swing from the chandelier? I mean,
Sia wasn't even out yet.
Totally. It just doesn't... You can't tell by what's going on, what happened, but she tries to administer CPR. Oh. And she was an ophthalmic technician. She doesn't work anymore because why would you if you're married to someone that makes $6 million a year? But she calls 911. They show up and they say that he suffers a cardiac arrest right after he falls. But they determine whatever happened, it's an accident. They're like, he could have tripped over something, a ball, the dog. He could have been using the scooter. We don't know.
Oh, my God.
But he's now going to be in the hospital, and his spinal cord is injured. So it's very bad.
Oh.
His heart and lungs had stopped, so that had created irreparable brain damage. Mm-hmm. He does end up dying of these injuries 5 days after this happens.
Poor kid.
Now, I think because we really don't know what happened, you can imagine how his mother might feel. Mm-hmm. That she was not there, that this woman, I don't know her feelings about her. I don't imagine they're great. Mm-hmm. She's a much younger woman. I'm not... I know that Dina and Jonah had quite a crazy relationship, which is right. to say they like had lots of police calls on each other.
Okay.
And that kind of comes out later. But Dina's like not accepting this is an accident.
Right.
She wants a new investigation mm-hmm. into the death. The authorities are like, we're not going to. It was an accident. Like, we're not reopening the case. There's nothing here. But some of the doctors are like, it's kind of weird. We don't think that necessarily injuries from the fall would have provoked this cardiac arrest. It's possible he could have suffocated prior to the fall. Again, this the authorities are saying it's an accident. Done. Open and closed. Rebecca, the next day, is like, you got to go home. Like, you can imagine having her 13-year-old sister visiting at that time. She's like, you got to go home. Like, I have to take care of this situation. Like,
That's horrible.
She takes her to the airport to fly back to Missouri. And while she's at the airport, she picks up Jonah's brother, Adam, who's flying in from Tennessee to be with his brother during this very challenging time, because at this point they don't know what Max's future is.
Yeah.
Rebecca, Jonah, and Adam have dinner with a friend that evening, and Rebecca and Adam go back to the house. Adam's staying in like their pool house, their guest house or whatever.
Right.
And Jonah goes back to the hospital to be like bedside. Basically, he and Dina are bedside with Max after he gets admitted, and he'll like crash in a Ronald McDonald house that's right there to be right there in case.
Yeah.
What we know is that there were reports that there was loud music coming from the house later that night. There is a neighbor that reportedly heard a woman scream that night and saw some teenagers outside, and maybe they could have been related to the screaming, but she says she heard a female screaming, help me, help me, help me, and that it was generally coming from the direction of the house. Now, we know that a message was left on Rebecca's phone at almost 1 a.m. that evening from Jonah, saying that Max's condition is
getting worse.
Yeah. Like, it's not going to be good news. The next day, on July 13th, 911 gets a call in the morning. Adam says that he found Rebecca hanging from the second story balcony outside the mansion, that the rope went around her neck and then into the house and was tied around furniture in there to hold it taut.
Oh my God.
He says that he called them right away. Then he ran into the kitchen, grabbed a knife to cut her down, and then he tried to do CPR. When they come, she's already been cut down. She's lying on the lawn. Her hands are tied behind her back. Her feet are tied together. She's naked. They're checking out the crime scene. They're like, she was obviously distraught. She had just, you know, maybe she blamed herself because she was the one watching Max.
Suicide when you're naked is not...
When you're naked, I agree. We'll get to everything that is strange about this. They're basically like, she found out Max was going to die from these injuries, that was likely, and then she killed herself. And I have to tell you, when the police rule it a suicide, Jonah says okay and accepts it, and he says publicly, nothing will ever be the same for our families after these losses, but with today's information providing some much needed answers, we will try to rebuild our lives and honor the memories we carry with us. Meanwhile, her sister says,
she didn't have a note or anything.
I do not want my sister's death to be ruled a suicide just because you don't have enough evidence to rule a homicide. Nothing adds up. And she's right. And you said, did she leave a note? There was, in black paint, written on a doorway up there, she saved him. Can you save her? In black block letters, in black paint.
Oh my God.
Now, I mentioned she was tied. She was also gagged with a t-shirt in her mouth. They do an autopsy and they see tape residue. They find some blood on her legs. And
okay, this is not.
they say there's never been a suicide that looked like this. It doesn't mean it's not one, but we've never seen anything like
this. Tape residue?
For so many reasons. The naked, the tape residue, the blood, the shirt wrapped around her, the way that the knots were tied were these sort of specialty knots.
Yeah.
That it's just like, how does she know how to do that? Paul Holes weighed in on it and was like, she would have had to cut a bunch of pieces of rope, bind her feet, tie the noose, put it around her neck, put the t-shirt in her mouth. Also, then, oh, this is like just a weird detail that bothers me too. The rope is over her hair. If you put anything on as a female and your hair's down, you just do that thing where you pull your hair out.
Yeah.
If you're doing it to yourself. You just don't do like a,
I would
over your hair. You just, it, there's something about that that I'm like, absolutely not.
The note, the quote unquote note in paint.
Well, then he, Paul's just saying, Paul Holes was saying it's so complex how she would have had to tie the knot around her wrists and do it behind her back and like keep it there. And then they did a reenactment where they showed someone her size able to do it. And it's like, no one's saying she wouldn't be able to do this. We're just saying
there's a lot of things happening.
You're going to kill yourself. This is how you went about it. It just, she also has trauma to her head. Mm-hmm. And they will say, well, she jumped off this balcony. She could have hit her head, like on something on the way down. There are branches by a nearby tree. But if you're jumping feet first off something and there's injuries on top of your head.
Also, let's not like forget that there were calls, there were screams heard saying, help me, help me.
There's also, okay, one thing that bothers me is that we just talked about how people were like, was Max suffocated or strangled or something before he was mm-hmm. ended up at the bottom of those stairs? If she hung herself and that's how she died, that mm-hmm. means she jumps off the balcony and it catches, right? Mm-hmm. And it would do a lot of damage to her neck. They say that it might have even been a near decapitation when you do something like that. Certainly, she would have dropped about 10 feet quickly and you would see a lot of damage. But they're saying it looks more consistent with manual mm-hmm. strangulation and then being lowered. It's just that
you're not seeing as much trauma to the body.
She didn't have a single dislocated vertebrae. Right. And it's just like you would have seen such severe damage if she had jumped.
Mm. Wow. Wow.
Okay, there's another really disturbing thing that they found at the scene of this crime. They found a knife and it had her menstrual blood on the handle. It had it on all four sides of the handle, as though maybe she was assaulted with it. Mm-hmm. There's no fingerprints on the knife. Her fingerprints are on the blade of the knife, and there's a mixture of DNA from two people on that knife, but there's not enough to be like conclusive. Like the mark of blood on her leg feels like it's somebody assaulted her and then pulled it out and it touched her leg kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it just, what's so creepy about this is that they look and there's no DNA or fingerprints of anyone. So it becomes this thing of, but like, because there's no DNA besides hers, it almost speaks to the fact that it was a homicide and that somebody was cleaning the DNA. And then there's like this, where was the paint? Like she used this black paint and they point to things like there was black paint on her nipple, but like not underneath her fingernails in this way where it's like
paint on.
Well, it just seems like somebody, they're like, maybe somebody was sexually assaulting her.
Yeah.
And it was the person that did that. And then they're like, no, her fingerprints are on the paint. It's her paint. It's like the idea of like the Ramses and it being like their notepad. It's like just because the person used things that were already in the home and you don't have a bunch of foreign bodies in the home, foreign entities, doesn't mean that someone didn't do this to her. The message she saved him, can you save her, does not in any way sound like a thing. Why in the world would that be her message? What does it mean? Whereas I can make up a message in my head. And my message would be, if somebody did harm Max, and I'm not saying somebody did, it was ruled an accident, but if somebody did, and Rebecca came upon him, gave him CPR and called 911 and got him to the hospital. And the person at this point, when she gets killed, remember, Max is still alive right now.
Yeah.
Max is not dead for a couple more days.
Yeah.
They say he's alive. They go back to the house and they harm her.
Yeah. That's obviously the first thought that comes in with that note.
And the thought would be, this is all towards payback. Jonah. This is all like somebody is an enemy of his and is after him and is trying to ruin his life. Can you save her? Like, and it feels so ominous. It feels so threatening. It doesn't feel at all related to a suicide.
And his brother was in the guest house the whole time?
Yes. That part, I remember reading, like, okay, I didn't read anything that made me go, it didn't make me like suspicious of him, but people were like, oh, it could be Dina, it could be him, it could be somebody that's like mad at her, like, how dare you let this happen to Max, kind of thing, like, does blame her, so then went after her. And they like pointed to things like in Anne Rule's book, I remember she said, like, he had porn on his computer, and you're like,
oh. So do a lot of people.
Yeah, and like the idea of like, did he go up and assault her and do this? But like, he's the only one there. What a dumb, weird thing to do. And like, this guy randomly flies in because this happened to Max and then does that. That's the next thing he does. It feels really crazy to me. It just feels like we so don't know the answer that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And just to be clear, Dina and her sister, there's surveillance footage of them. They're at the hospital when this happens. So is Jonah. But Adam is at home and people are like, oh, he sounded so out of breath when he called 911. Like, and he said he gave Rebecca CPR after he cut her down, but they didn't find his DNA on her body. But I don't know. I don't understand DNA well enough to know whether that's like a catch-all where it's like it would definitely be found or not. But then there is like some things where they're like, oh, he's a tugboat captain. He knows how to do knots. He knows how to do nautical knots.
Okay. That's wild. Is there any, do they ever figure out who?
No, but I'll tell you what did happen. There was a civil trial that that Rebecca's family did against Adam.
Okay.
And they did win it, basically. And it was a civil trial doesn't need to be unanimous.
Yeah.
But it was a 9-3 decision. And they were like, Adam Shackney's liable for her death. And that happened in 2018. And he's always been like, absolutely not. And they settled with the family for $600,000. The family wanted like $5 million. But they were like, hey, now that this happened, they wrote to the San Diego County Medical Examiner's Office. And they're like, can you change her manner of death from suicide to homicide or at least to undetermined?
Totally. The like the cause of death is so important for a criminal trial.
Right. And well, and they're like, even now that we're done with the civil case, if we do that, yeah, exactly. It will put pressure to keep the case open, to keep looking.
For sure.
And
oh my God.
They maintained suicide. So it's just a case. Everybody's like, the Max death, weird. The Rebecca death 2 days later, weird. The note, weird. And I wish I had more to give you than this, but if you are curious about more of it, like I said, Anne Rule has she doesn't necessarily have any more answers than I just gave you.
Yeah.
And she wrote the story before the civil suit and stuff, but she at least presents everything she has in a really clear way where you get a better feeling of who the players are.
My God, that is so maddening.
Don't know if it would help you, but I'm like, The Adam thing doesn't feel right to me. The like Holy brother shit. Happens to fly in and like do this horrible thing. It feels so random and wrong. And it feels to me like these two deaths in this house in 2 days have to be related.
2 days. They have to be. 2 days apart. That's beyond a coincidence.
With that note.
That's beyond a coincidence.
And with that note, I can't believe that the first was ruled accidental, the second suicide, and that nobody is actively looking into this. And that is also just like...
maddening.
We definitely won't get an answer. Unless there's some sort of wonderful armchair detective that's going to put all their time into this. I just don't know how you would get an answer.
What does Paul Holes think?
Paul Holes thinks it's fishy.
Yeah.
Paul Holes thinks it's fishy for sure. I haven't heard him say anything about the Max death, but I have heard him say, I've read about him saying with Rebecca, there's just too many things with the lack of neck injuries and the head injuries and all these things that make it seem fishy.
Yeah.
And that's the story of this horrible week that Jonah had, where he lost everyone he loved and got no answers, but seemingly, at least to the public, has been like, I'm satisfied with the answers.
Well, maybe that's also self-preservation. Like, can you go?
Oh,
like,
my God. Is he going to devote his whole life to like trying to figure this out?
I mean, yeah. Some people would. Some people, it sounds like, you know, also though that.
I think Dina would. I think his ex-wife is like.
I don't think she's satisfied with Adam. With Max.
No, she's not satisfied at all with that being ruled an accident.
And it sounds like Rebecca's family isn't satisfied either.
That's right.
All right. I'm just going to jump into mine because it also has to do with changing the cause of death. And is it an accident or was it nefarious, right? I got this information from Oxygen, ABC, Hindustan Times, Daily Mail. I'm going to be talking about Dee Dee Jackson. Dee Dee Jackson has a really famous last name, and it's because she was at one point, she was married to Tito Jackson of Jackson 5.
Oh.
Yeah. She and Tito had 3 sons, and they love the name T. Dee Dee kind of lost out on the D. It was Tito, so it's going to be Taj, TJ, and Terrell.
Okay. All right.
How would you spell it? T-A-R-Y-L-L. Terrell?
Terrell.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Dee Dee and Tito were married from 1972 to 1988. In some reports, they divorced, I think, officially in 1993. But a little bit about them is Tito talked about how he was a bit of an introvert and she was like such a fun, gregarious, outgoing person. Apparently, like, she kissed him the first time they met on the cheek and, you know, they fell in love and got married. And she knew that he was touring with the Jackson 5. And so, like, she tried to give her 3 sons, like, a pretty normal life. And like, she loved her kids. She did everything for her kids. So her and Tito get divorced. And a couple months, they're officially divorced in 1993, I guess. And she starts dating. She's 39 years old. She's getting back out there. And she meets Donald Bohanna, who's a 59-year-old businessman. So Donald is also a divorcee. He lives a really nice life in California. He has cars. He's got a plane, a boat. He's handsome, wealthy, and successful. Apparently, he runs hospitals and insurance companies. And I think famously, he opened like the first Denny's in a certain part of California. He's just like an entrepreneur business guy. He knows celebrities. He's really well connected. And him and Dee Dee start to date. And they're 8 weeks into their relationship. And like, it's pretty common to like go over to each other's house, hang out, drink, eat dinner. And it's the night of August 26th, 1994. And she and Donald are hanging out doing just that. They just finished dinner. They're drinking. He's drinking wine. She's having a rum and coke. It's really hot in August in LA. And so what they would typically do is they'd go out by the pool. They drink, maybe she'd have a little cigarette, but the two of them would just like hang out. And apparently, like at one point they went to the hot tub and then she wanted to go swimming. We don't really know exactly what happened. But what we do know for sure is that on October 27th, 1994, at 3:30 in the morning, Donald calls 911 and he calls them to report that someone has drowned in the pool. He does not say a name, but he says someone's drowned in the pool. The first responders arrive and they see a woman against a tree. They perform CPR on her. And though she does vomit some water, she does also smell like alcohol and she is never able to be revived. She is declared dead. Mm. At the scene of this crime, Donald is there and they notice his speech is slurred and he was clearly under the influence. But he does identify the victim as 39-year-old Dolores Dee Dee Jackson. Donald is totally incoherent. He is an absolute mess. He calls his ex-wife, Sheila. She comes to the scene and she is able to calm him down enough that he can give a statement. So he tells the officers what happened. He says that the two of them, they were drinking. They had a bunch of drinks. They were both in the hot tub. And then Dee Dee goes, I'm going to go swim laps. And he said that she was a really good swimmer and that she is capable of doing, quote, Olympic style turns, right? So like doing a lap, turning, swimming back. And Donald goes, I'm not a good swimmer. And so he sees her swimming alone. And then all of a sudden he sees her beginning to struggle. He claims that she is flailing in the pool and he recognizes that this is too violent for him to go in. So my sister was a lifeguard and she says that probably some of the most dangerous thing to do is like save someone who's drowning because they are doing everything to like stay above water and they will pull you down in order to save them. So my sister always was like, you have to get the person on their back so that you can drag them out because otherwise they're going to push you down with them. So he doesn't have lifeguarding experience, but I think he sees her flailing and he's like, I can't save you. I'm not a good swimmer. So he grabs a long pool skimmer. He puts it in the water. But that doesn't work. She doesn't grab it. She can't get it. He can't pull her in. Eventually he sees her calming down. So he jumps in the pool and he lifts her out to where he tries to revive her himself and he fails. And then he calls 911. So that's what led him to 3:30. Upon her death, they examine her body. They find scratches on her face, bruising on her breasts, but these could have very well happened in the attempts to rescue her. The LA County Medical Examiner also sees bruising on either side of her head, which they also note, they can't point to a clear reason why that happened, but they just make a note of it, that like she does have bruising on either side of her head. They also notice her blood alcohol level is 3 times the legal amount. But they also notice that in her hands, there's no defensive evidence under her fingers, right? There's no scratching. There's no DNA. Sadly, there is no witnesses besides Donald. What is noteworthy about Donald is that his ex-wife, Sheila, she spoke very highly of him. She's like, he is a kind man. He is incapable of murder. And so police are like taking that into consideration and they're like, okay, this seems like this is a really, really sad situation. It seems to be an accident that she was drinking and she drowned. However, the cause of death, so the police believe it's an accident, but the cause of death on her death certificate says undetermined, which as we know from your story, it like opens up a lot of doubt. So from the testimony, when her loved ones find out, I mean, it's horribly devastating. She's leaving behind 3 boys who absolutely adore her. But as soon as the story starts to come to light of her swimming capabilities, this causes a lot of questioning from her family. Tito Jackson said the first thing he said when he found out how she died, he goes, drown? What was she doing in the water? Because Dee Dee and I, neither of us swim. Her son says that his mom was not a good swimmer.
Whoa, very different from an Olympic turn.
Very different from an Olympic turn. So like the question, the real crux of this case is, was she a good swimmer or not? What's the story? The Jacksons are not satisfied with the police's assertion that it was an accident. And so at this point, I mean, obviously they're an incredibly powerful family. They have the means and the opportunity to like do whatever they want to do. They hire an attorney and they start trying to do their own investigation on their own end. Of course, like when the question of was she a good swimmer or not, some people responded like, if she was afraid of water, why did she have a swimsuit at this guy's place? Like she was in a swimsuit. Like what was that about?
He didn't dress her in a swimsuit and push her in the pool.
No. I mean, although at the same time, people might not want to swim, but still want to look cute in a swimsuit. That I actually stand by. But also there is some stories where she was telling her friends that Donald was actually teaching her how to swim. So maybe she was becoming a better swimmer. Another friend told police at the time that she once said, I hope they don't find me like they did Nicole Simpson, referring, of course, to Nicole Simpson of the O.J. Simpson case in 1994. This happened in June 1994. This death happened in August of 1994. Mm-hmm. So, of course, like there's just like some like suspicious feelings going around. But again, swimming is like a really hard thing to prove otherwise. In the investigation, they're sort of like peeling apart every moment from that initial 911 call to what he told his story. And they see what's super weird in that call is that he never mentioned her name.
Oh, really?
He's like, someone drowned. And the way they talk about it, it's like, no, it sounded like.
You can never weigh that stuff.
I know, but.
Because the truth is, when you're on the phone with, I could totally see doing that. Like the idea of like, I'm talking to someone and you don't know who they are. The important thing is that they're drowned. You're not going to send different help dependent on who drowned.
I know, but I think it's so interesting. They were dating for 8 weeks and it's like someone drowned. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's hard to sort of be the arbiter of that. But it's like the question that is on everyone's mind, and I think especially her loved ones, is like, it sounds like someone just came and fell in the pool. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what happened. Like, this woman you spent 8 weeks with, we were spending time with, like, died under your care.
Right.
The Jacksons hired another attorney, and they pushed for a second autopsy. And in that autopsy, they found that she bit through her tongue and one of her earrings had been torn off. So they go, okay, maybe with like the bruising on her head, maybe there was a fight. And then what the Jacksons did is that they went for the jugular, which in my mind is the media. They put out a pretty aggressive statement that they believed Donald Bohanna killed Dee Dee Jackson. And that is a really powerful move because it doesn't matter if it's the truth. It matters if people have heard it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So at that point, like, they start spinning. They start sort of having this concerted attack because from their end, they're like, this guy killed her and he's going to get off scot-free. So they go like full court press on this idea and they have their attorney who claims that the police responded to a bunch of 911 calls made from Donald's house by his past girlfriends, you know, for abuse or fights or things like that. But there is no actual record of that. There's only noise complaints and all of his past girlfriends are like, he was not abusive. He was a really nice guy. But again, it's like, does the truth matter? The media is already like spinning it. And of course, obviously the Jacksons are very famous. At this point though, you know, the Jacksons want the prosecutors to file a case, to indict him, to charge him, but they don't have nearly enough evidence that would hold up in court. All of it is like conjecture. All of it is like hearsay. So the DA at this point decides that they're not going to prosecute the case. And also her death is undetermined. So it's like that doesn't help necessarily. And of note, at this point, the O.J. Simpson case was coming up. And so I think a lot of resources were being put towards that case. And also that case like is a clear murder. I think like they felt a little bit like it got lost in the shuffle, this case. So the Jacksons file a $2 million civil suit for wrongful death against Donald, similar to your case. At that point, Bohanna files for bankruptcy. And so that starts to get this conversation of, oh, this guy who like lived a life of luxury, maybe he was out of money and he was trying to get Dee Dee to access the Jacksons' money and she refused. So maybe that allowed for a fight. He pushed her in and it turned deadly and she died. So 2 years pass, you know, the Jacksons are convinced that he did it. And in 1996, Lori Jones, who is a member of the Family Violence Unit, decides to eventually pursue the case. So the DA goes to the medical examiner to include new findings that have come in the 2 years that the case has been dormant. She comes to the DA and she's like, listen, I have evidence from swimming experts. And in addition, there is just more circumstantial evidence over the past 2 years. And so because of these swim experts, they had said something like, you know, when someone's rescuing someone, chances are like they'll have more bruises than the victim. And since Donald didn't have any bruising and they had talked about like how bruising wouldn't appear in certain ways, but they had a swim expert. And so from this letter or expert testimony from the DA, the medical examiner was able to switch the cause of death from undetermined to homicide by blunt force trauma. And now we're in business.
Wow.
Donald is arrested March 7th, 1997. He pleads not guilty. On June 12th, 1988, a year later, they lay out their case. They say that the two of them were fighting, and this led to her either falling in the pool or being pushed in the pool, and she couldn't swim and she drowned. They also discredited Donald's story about how she was in the water for a while because her body showed no evidence of like skin wrinkling, which they call washerwoman's effect. So the forensic pathologist that the DA had on the stand was saying, you know, listen, her skin was not wrinkled. She was not in the water for that long. So that supports that maybe she was pushed in and she couldn't swim. They also had the expert testify that the rescuer would have more bruising and Donald did not have any bruises. And his attorneys had an expert witness in their pocket who said that, listen, you could cause all of those bruising that was on her body could have been from rescue attempts. The bruising on her breast could be from CPR. Mm-hmm. The scratches on her face could have been, you know, in any way, mm-hmm. resuscitation. And also her liver was heavily diseased from drinking a lot. So bruising would be more prominent or would appear more quickly in her, would appear quicker in her circumstances. However, at this trial, the expert witness on the defense's team never testified. His attorney never called him to the stand. I assume it's that he would have failed cross. Maybe that he didn't feel totally confident in his expert testimony or he wasn't a good witness. He actually, his attorney said that he would have been a weak witness. And mm-hmm. it was better to get what you want out of the prosecution's witnesses than your own, which reminds me a lot of your dad's case, mm-hmm. where he's like, I'm not going to call any witnesses. Yeah. I'm just going to dispute their testimony. Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting about this is it seems like he does do that. The crux of the case, which allowed them to bring to the court, which was changing the cause of death from undetermined to homicide by blunt force trauma. This was determined 2 years after she died in Donald's pool. The person, the expert who was a big part of changing this factor from blunt force trauma, said because of his visits to Bohanna's pool, his experience as a lifeguard, and because someone in the DA's office had told him that an expert had confirmed this opinion, like bolstered his testimony. But the medical examiner who changed the report had admitted on the stand that he'd never spoken to that actual expert. And he actually did not read the report before changing the opinion.
Oh.
So all of this was like a DA came and was like, listen, I got an expert. Here's a letter. Blunt force like trauma, all this stuff. It's sort of hearsay.
And then medical like, examiner's okay, like, I'll click that box.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's like, oh, I guess you're right.
Okay.
So it's like,
you saw an expert.
The medical examiner was never like, let me look at this peer reviewed. Yeah. It's like all hearsay. Like, and I think too, with undetermined to say that cause of death, I think it can go either way.
Yeah.
And I think like this just tipped the scales that way. And this guy was probably like, whatever. Sure. Just another thing was that was interesting in coming up with this in the case was like, I had no idea when I started researching this case that this would come up. But apparently, do you know who is dating one of Dee Dee and Tito's sons, TJ, at the time of his mother's death?
Ashton Kutcher. Just kidding.
Kim Kardashian.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. And she testified at the trial.
Wow.
And this was at the same time. Keep in mind, this is in the same time span as like the O.J. Simpson case that her dad was residing over. Wow. Or was on the defense team.
His family's headed to court.
Like, it is wild. Mm-hmm. She's quoted as saying, my boyfriend's mother, whom I was really close with, was murdered in 1994, and I had to be a part of that trial. To have that experience at such a young age was insane. All of this, all of the evidence, it doesn't seem like it's enough to convict. Yeah. But again, I do think that like the media effort, the PR effort to malign Donald worked, and he is found guilty of second degree murder and he is sentenced to 15 years to life. In 2002, he tries to appeal the conviction on the grounds of ineffective counsel. He really blames his lawyer mm-hmm. for not having the expert witness on stand, for him not testifying. Like, he's like, obviously ineffective counsel, but the judge is like, listen, he did a good job. I can't appeal based on that reasoning alone. He has been up for parole 4 times. And at every parole hearing, Dee Dee's sons would come and object to his release. Mm-hmm. And he's maintained his innocence the whole time. In 2017, while he was in his 80s, Donald was interviewed in jail by ABC News. And he said that he would sooner die in prison than admit to killing her. Donald's daughter is combing through the files. She believes in her dad's innocence. She's lost her father. He's been in jail this whole time. And she says that from her research, the prosecution's medical expert, while he had experience as a hospital pathologist, as a coroner in criminal cases, he had very limited knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not someone who did this often. She says he, quote, dabbled in autopsies. Mm-hmm. Donald Bohanna ended up serving 24 years and was granted parole finally in December of 2022. And at that parole hearing, Dee Dee's sons said, if you feel it's time for him to get out, then let him out. Mm-hmm. Which I think is probably, I mean, they believe this man killed their mother, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And is it an accident? Is it murder? I mean, it's a really sad case of this poor woman who died under suspicious circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so it leaves a lot of questions.
But it does.
I wanted to tell the story of Dee Dee Jackson, who was a really wonderful mom. And I know loved her and like was a really great mom.
Yeah.
Was a really great mom.
Well, and thank you for telling that. It is so interesting that both our stories are all about like leveraging
the cause of death.
Yeah.
And like yours is like by its listed as suicide. There's no way they're going to change that.
No.
And so they can't pursue, if the cause of death is not listed as homicide. I mean, undetermined, they had a little shot at the beginning. And then, of course, as soon as it became homicide,
it's so interesting that they don't ever just say like,
we don't know.
Or like, it feels like they're using, I think with the suicide ruling in my case, it was the lack of DNA to prove anyone else was there, combined with like, we have reasonable cause to think she was upset, of course. But then you're like, why'd she get naked, yo?
I'm curious if they just want it wrapped up.
It's baffling. But yeah. Anybody with any ideas, I'm all fucking ears.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Send me more articles.
That hers is, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, I mean, obviously the criminal justice system believes that Dee Dee Jackson was murdered. Mm-hmm. It does seem like the amount of alcohol, she had 3 times the amount of alcohol in her system, like in swimming, that's really dangerous, mm-hmm. you know, like yeah, yeah. That could have been an accident.
Totally. I have no, and none of us have any ideas, more to the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Not overwhelming hers evidence like, in I mean, any direction.
Hers is like, was it a sad accident? Is it a murder? The fact that like that is listed as a suicide because it's a hanging is such bullshit. Like, that feels like the only reason it's listed as a suicide, right? No,
it's so crazy. And the fact that they can't prove anybody else was there, that there was, like, no forced entry, there was no, there's no DNA of someone else. So, that's it.
It's fucked. And poor Max.
I know.
That kid, ugh. All right, well, we're going to go.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
Okay, goodbye.